Well, welcome. This is episode 12 of the Aha Moment. My name is Erin Backus, and I have my co-host with me this evening.
Hello, hello. This is Irene Barber in Durham, Maine. And we have power back on. So exciting.
Oh, I know. I was kind of nervous today whether we were able to do this, but I'm glad you have power back.
Yeah, I was a little apprehensive, but it worked out.
I am coming to you from Milford, Connecticut tonight, and to finish off our 2020 and our first season of the Aha Moment, we have a wonderful guest with us tonight, Laura Rumpf. Hi, Laura.
Hi, guys. It's good to see you.
I know.
Me too.
I like doing the Zoom so we can see, you know, faces, and I'm sorry for those of you who are on the Podbean and hear us, but...
But our colorful voices will make up for it, so you don't need to see our faces.
Oh my goodness. So Laura is a registered horticultural therapist. She received her training in HT from the Horticulture Institute, same as Irene and myself. She is an independent contractor and is the owner of Seattle Horticultural Therapy. She currently provides horticultural therapy to veterans, high school students with developmental disabilities, and before COVID, to residents of group family homes, which included those living with dementia, depression, and the effects of stroke and other illnesses. She has been co-facilitating the monthly garden discovery walks in partnership with the UV Medicine Memory and Brain Wellness Center and the Seattle Parks and Rec dementia-friendly program, which are really cool. If you haven't seen her videos, definitely follow her on social media and Instagram. I think you can find those things on Facebook, right, Laura?
Possibly. I'm not sure about Facebook. Instagram, I'm there under Seattle Horticultural Therapy. If people checked out, it's the UW, so University of Washington, Memory and Brain Wellness Center. They have a whole slew of videos, and so they're there as well.
Yeah, so they're really great videos, so check them out. And last but not least, Laura was a presenter at the 2019 Northwest Nature and Health Symposium at the University of Washington. She also has conducted sessions for Neighbor Healthcare and Brain Injury Alliance of Washington State, and we are very thankful to have her on tonight as our final guest of 2020.
Yes. Thank you, Laura, for coming on. So appreciative that you are taking time out of your huge work schedule that I'm sure you're experiencing during this pandemic. How has the pandemic been treating you in the horticultural therapy process?
Well, I lost a lot of my work because I was going into 8 different homes. They were adult family homes for people living with dementia illnesses. So I haven't seen them since February or March. And then I was working with high school students who were coming to an urban farm. They have developmental disabilities. And then that stopped in March. Pretty much everything kind of came to a standstill, but the collaboration that I do with the UW Memory and Brain Wellness Center, which was a monthly walk, had already had the funding, to pay me from a grant. And so they said, well, what about making it virtual? Can you do that? And I said, I can try. And so I do these monthly walks virtually, using my iPhone camera. And then, so I do about a 30-minute walk through a different public garden around Seattle. And then I do about a 10 to 20-minute HT activity portion. And that's kept me busy just because it's been a learning experience.
What has the reception been with the walks that you're doing, these virtual walks? Have the populations been positively receptive to that?
Yeah, it's a little bit hard to get the data from the viewers because they just haven't been responsive to any kind of questionnaire that we've put out.
Wow.
I've gotten some good feedback from a couple of care partners that I know personally and reached out to, and so they've given me some good feedback. I've presented them at different forums for organizations trying to figure out what to do, especially for people with dementia. And the facilitators, the attendees of those webinars were really excited about it. I think they have used them throughout their work. So I've spread it far and wide. I've shared it. So the UW shares it through the university. The University of British Columbia has attended a couple of these webinars, and so they're spreading it out. It's through the Parks and Rec Department, Dementia-Friendly Recreation, and so they're dispersing it. So when you do go on to the YouTube video and you click on, or you see how many viewers there are, I mean, some of them have almost 500 views.
Wow.
So somebody's watching them.
Yeah. And do you think, and that's actually a good point, is somebody, and I bet they're seeing it several times over so that they're really taking it in as well, possibly. And
maybe.
And so I'm curious, once they have attended these webinars or they get the video, can they actually download it and utilize to disperse that webinar or that video?
They can share the link.
Yeah, okay.
Share the link, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so you're able to expand maybe to broader demographics or broader networks in that case.
Yeah. So it's been a great tool in terms of sort of, you know, marketing HT, but also for practitioners, for, you know, researchers who are trying to figure out, you know, what to do and whether maybe even at past the pandemic, they might reach more people than we would.
Right.
You know,
that is a silver lining to this, is that we have pushed forward this online experience and making it somehow more accessible to those who wouldn't otherwise be able to travel as much to getting to these settings.
Yep. So yeah,
that's awesome that you're bringing it to them. I mean, I know they're not necessarily getting the smells, but they're getting the sounds.
So now we've tried, since everybody has just accepted the fact that this is going to go on for a while, they really are trying to bring some kind of programming. So now I'm working with a couple senior centers and the programs they have for people with dementia. I'm actually putting together materials, getting it to the senior centers, they disperse it to the participants, and I've done two sessions that way with people with dementia. So they've actually got the materials, and we're doing it together.
That's when cool. You say materials, what are those materials exactly?
So let's see, we did a wreath creating activity using willow, and so I went out and cut my willow and, you know, and bundled it up and put it together them to use. And then another session was doing leaf rubbings, and so I have a whole bunch of pressed leaves that I sorted through those to them. I actually was able to get into the senior center and go kind of rummage through the arts and crafts room, and so I could use some of their materials, like the paper and the crayons and that sort of thing. I'm doing the same thing with this group of students with developmental disabilities. So I sometimes do it from the farm, so that I do a walkabout around the farm and show them what's growing and show them the things that they may have started last spring with the seeds. But the same thing, compiling, we try to do like 3 weeks worth of three sessions worth. Mm-hmm. And put everything in a bag, and so that, you know, we're minimizing the contact time that the teacher has in delivering those materials. that's tricky because people want to get into those materials and start working with them right away. And so, you know, you don't always find the right materials. But anyway, it's been very interesting, very eye-opening.
And so where you are now and the fact that we're in this pandemic and we're learning about versatility, first off, you have some experience about being versatile and being flexible to living in different areas of the world as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about where you how you came across horticultural therapy? And was it just one moment, or were there several aha moments, as we like to call it, that brought you to the... Yeah, exactly. That brought you to the world of horticultural therapy.
Yeah. There were. I mean, I guess there was one major aha moment, but, you know, when you look back on it, it's like, oh, right. You know, that's... So, for example, I had a certificate in horticulture, and I had a little gardening business. This was back in the, you know, early 90s. And then my husband got a job working for the Foreign Service. And so the two of us and our two little daughters started living abroad. And we did that for about 20-something years or so. And couldn't take my gardening business with me, but I picked up skills like teaching English. And I did a lot of volunteering at local places, you know, orphanages, and they were usually places for destitute families, because I went to some pretty poor countries, developing countries. And but because I had this passion for gardening, I was always trying to build a garden wherever I went and visiting, you know, places where plants grew. And so even though I wasn't fluent in the language or then we could connect through these plants. And so
Remind me, what country were you in?
So we started in Hong Kong, and then we went to Burma or Myanmar.
Oh, yeah.
3 years, yeah. And there, that was amazing. Boy, the hibiscus grew enormous there. Just like huge. And you know, Burmese is a difficult language to learn, and so I, you know, beyond, you know, the hellos and goodbyes, I really couldn't communicate other than, you know, through sign language and, you know, eyes lit up and you know, looking at plants and that sort of thing. After Burma, we were in Italy, in Rome for 4 years, and then we went to...
And you ate a lot.
I ate a lot, yeah. Yes. I have a real appreciation for, you know, every time I smell rosemary and sage, it reminds me of Italy. And then we went to Madagascar for 3 years, and it was there that I... introduced sort of the idea of gardens in the school environment. So in the international school, I built a little elementary school garden there.
And your daughters were at that school at the time?
Yeah, these were at the international schools, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kind of vegetables could you grow in Madagascar? Most anything?
Yeah, just about anything. So the capital is at a higher elevation, and it actually does get cold in the winter. So, you know, all your typical vegetables, but also there are a lot of tropical things. You know, bananas grow there. Mm-hmm. And then, let's see, so then after Madagascar, went to Senegal, West Africa. And same thing, I was learning French and the local language, Wolof, and my vocabulary consisted of plants, mm-hmm. Gardening materials. And so, started trying to build a garden there. And then the last place we were at overseas was in Baghdad, Iraq. And it was there that, you know, so the compound, the American embassy compound, which is where everybody lives, is like a miniature college campus. And everybody's working very hard because you can't leave that campus, that wall. So everyone works very hard, very long hours. And then, you know, after hours, people hang out. But I noticed that they all kind of self-segregate. There are people from all over the world. And when you're living in a high-stress environment like that, then naturally people are going to want to, you know, congregate with those that you know and can right. communicate with. But the one place where we folks were really integrated was in this little community garden that we started on that compound. And it was there that, you know, we were really trading seed. I remember some Kenyan folks who brought back some corn seed from Kenya with them when they were out on vacation. They came back and grew it, and it was must have been like 15 or 20 feet tall. It was
wow.
I had a friend from India who introduced me to amaranth, the leaf. Mm-hmm. That was delicious.
What can you do with that one? Amaranth?
You can, well, so.
You're on mute.
Sorry, one sec. I don't know what happened. You got muted.
Yeah, somehow.
That's okay. Try it again. So, what can you do with amaranth? So,
yeah, amaranth. My friend was eating it like spinach, the leaf. It was a big, large leaf. But then I learned also that it grows this amazing seed stock.
Yeah.
And you can, and you eat the grain.
What other culture uses it? The ancient culture of the Aztecs. They used amaranth as well. So, anyways.
Yeah.
It turns
out. It's a little bit like a quinoa, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. They refer to it as a super grain as much as a leaf. Leaf equivalent. Yeah.
I didn't realize you could eat the leaf.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want it, just like spinach, you want to have it when it's at more of a younger stage. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There were these cucumbers. This Iraqi friend of mine, he gave me the seed for them. He's like, I'm going to get you cucumber seeds, but I have to find them first. And I was like, well, don't go far, you know, because there's car bombs going off every day around this. He came back, sure enough. He said, I had to go all over the city, you know, from every market to find these seeds. And here they are. And I grew them, and sure enough, they were really cool. They were very, they grew like a spiral and kind of like an S shape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He said that they were Syrian. So anyway, they must be some sort of Middle Eastern cucumber.
So you didn't save the seed?
No, and I wasn't there very long. Well, and then what happens is when the temperature gets over 120, 25, nothing grows. So it's like their dormant season in the summer. It's not only the heat, but these winds. I mean, it's like standing with a hair blower in your face. And it was fascinating. Everything dies down to the ground. And then when it cools down to 80-ish, things start growing again. And I thought, well, that was very cool. I'd never experienced that before.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, just
it's a heat dormancy versus a cold dormancy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the fact that these folks were so passionate enough to about what they were growing and then wanted to share that and that it brought us all together, when it normally wouldn't have, mm-hmm. you know, we had, you know, common meals together and just shared information and seed. And one of the memories that sticks in my mind was there are, for some reason, there were a lot of guards that came from Peru, and they would, you know, patrol the area, and, you know, they'd have their guns and they'd always stop at the garden and like, look at what I'm growing. And I had some chili peppers asking me about them, and, you know, and he's standing there with his gun in one hand and eating chili peppers in the other, just like, you could see he just like was off in another world and just enjoying those chili peppers. So they became regulars to the garden as well.
A moment of vulnerability.
Literally. Yeah.
You got to their soft side.
Exactly. I learned how, like, you know, you can get to people's hearts when you learn what their favorite food or plant is.
And so was there actually like a dialogue between the two of you, or was it more of a nonverbal cue of just how he was just happy?
It was both. I could speak a little Spanish, so okay. It was both. Mm-hmm. But when I got back from that experience and we knew that we were going to sort of put down roots, literally, in the space again, that I thought, wow, that was such an amazing experience that, you know, how do I replicate that coming back from the States and into the States? And so I wondered if there was this way to combine people and plants. And mm-hmm. while I was supposed to be searching for a job, you know, to help pay the rent in an expensive city like DC, I was always coming across jobs that were gardeners or, you know, working at a nursery, and I somehow came upon horticultural therapy. And there is such a
thing. Yay, you actually said aha.
I did. I said aha. And so I learned about, let's see, I think actually somebody told me about Melwood Center for Horticulture, I think they call it, in Prince George's County, Maryland, and said, go visit there and talk to these people. And so I did, and it's where I met some great folks, and I ended up volunteering there and also attending the classes through HTI and then doing my internship there. This was in about 2015.
Yeah. I think, now I think about it, you and I, didn't we do it together? No, you were after me.
Yeah, I know.
You were after me, because I finished in 2013, I think, now that I think about it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Didn't me in 2010.
Yeah, so three-year intervals here, apparently. So Laura, one thing I'm curious, too, while you're telling us these amazing stories, is how horticulture meant to you personally going throughout all of these cultures. And I mean, was it therapeutic for you, not just for the chance to connect to people, but your own adaptation, your own need of a feeling like you belong, etc.?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you're landing in a strange land with a foreign language that you can't speak yet anyway. You know, it's exhausting, and I, for somebody to try to make their way in a new place. I mean, I'm very fortunate in that I had the safety net of a community, you know, the embassy community.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, to sort of feel get that normalcy or familiarity
mm-hmm.
into your life, then gardening was it for me.
And did your girls participate in that gardening experience with you at all or not?
No, not so much. No. I mean, you know, they were curious, I guess, about what I was growing, but no. And I think back on it, you know, they are now, they're, you know, young adult women, but it was the same for me. And so when you say that were there many aha moments, it's like thinking back now to when my mom was a huge gardener, and she needed it for the depression that she suffered from on and off. Then I, you know, it makes a lot of sense. It's like, aha, that's why she was doing it. And so, yeah, there are a lot of those things that all kind of finally came together that meshed well. And, you know, by then I had learned some really great people skills and it's been the most fulfilling career yet for me.
And is there, so Aaron has this awesome question that I think would be symbolic to your experiences that you've traversed through many cultures and so forth. So, Erin, what is your signature question that you would love to pose to Laura?
You've cracked me up with that comment. My signature question. I mean, you obviously are a world traveler, and you've hit many different climates. But I mean, what is your go-to plant when you're running sessions, or what's your favorite one to work with?
I would have to say that would be scented geraniums. I first learned about them while working at Meltwood. We were propagating, maybe 5 or 6 varieties of them. My favorite is the peppermint scented geranium with the really fuzzy leaves. It's so sensory stimulating, you know, visually. It's just this bright emerald green, and the texture is, as I mentioned, very soft. It's got that incredible peppermint strong scent to it. Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's easy to grow. It's super easy to propagate.
Is it easy to grow from seed?
You know, I've never tried it from seed.
No, stem cuttings. Great stem cuttings.
Yeah.
So you can find someone with a plant and do some stem cuttings, right?
Yeah. And once they have that one plant, you can get a million babies from it because it just takes off. The one that we had at Meltwood actually survived the winters. It was an old one, and it was in a huge pot. It was the mother plant. And they survive outside here in Seattle too. I mean, they die back to the ground, they come back. So they're really versatile. And
did you come across that plant in any of your travels, or did you come across that when you started working in horticultural therapy?
No, I came across it in at Meltwood. Okay. But it turns out that they're native to South Africa.
Yeah, I was going to say, they have a Mediterranean sub-Saharan kind of cultivation.
Yeah, this year I grew some plants. I guess I was getting nostalgic for Africa because I grew some indigo, which was really fun. We ended up dyeing a whole bunch of stuff. And I also tried growing the hibiscus that, you know, in West Africa, they make that drink, the bisa. And I got about eight little hibiscus petals to make like one cup of tea. But that was so much fun.
Do you know if that was hibiscus machiotos? Do you know which kind of hibiscus that was?
It could be like hibiscus coccinea or something like that.
Oh, coccineus? Yeah. That could be it.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Mosquitoes is just American.
Right? Oh, it is?
It's got a very waxy flower, the calyx.
Oh, okay. It's it's the more tropical one. Okay.
Yeah, it's the one that grows in Africa.
Okay. Because I know there are like hibiscus teas, and they're even making, you know, hibiscus sours now for mm-hmm. beer. So, yeah. I mean, it's a very, it's a plant that now so many markets are taking advantage of for its medicinal and tasty properties, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not only its color is beautiful.
Well, we're going to have to figure out a way to grow these things in Maine, Irene, is...
Well, right. So I'm hardy hibiscus, machiotos, and coccineus. I think they could actually work here. I mean, I know machiotos does, but yeah. I'm just trying to remember coccineus. I've seen coccineus in zone 7, but I don't think I've seen it up here.
Yeah, I don't think it goes up that far to the... I think it's more like a southern plant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember seeing them huge bushes next to fuchsia, huge fuchsia bushes in Cameroon when I was there.
Yeah.
So I can definitely empathize how that scene just is very...
Could you imagine creating some kind of conservatory for all these the African refugees that we have in Maine? To walk into a place like that?
Oh my God, you just...
There's tons of African refugees in Maine.
Yes. We have Somalian, we have Somalian, Rwandan, Ethiopian, Burundi and Senegalese. And okay, I have to tell you guys, this is nothing to do with our story.
That would be a great connection.
Continue on, but I have a story to tell you afterwards.
Oh my gosh. So guys, thank you so much for coming out tonight. We do want to end this because I know we have more to talk about, but of course our listeners, we're going on a pretty long time, but
you can hear how once you talk about plants, how it
goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yes, exactly. It energizes the spirit, and we want to exude that. We, Aaron and I, and all of our featured guests want to extend that experience for all of you. And just and if you've never heard of horticultural therapy and you're still learning about horticulture, just start somewhere. And that's
a great way to like show connection, you know, like
exactly
and to form connections. So, well, thank you, Laura, so much for coming on tonight. We really do appreciate you being our last guest of 2020.
Yeah.
Our last guest of our first season of the Aha Moment. It's really
woohoo! Congratulations, you guys. It's a wonderful thing.
And thank you to all of our featured 12 guests. They were inspirations for everybody listening. So I'm thrilled that Aaron and I got this going, and mostly Aaron. Thank you.
Please follow, please like, please share, and we'll see you all in 2021.
Yay.